Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. President Biden announcing yesterday updated perspectives on vaccine mandates. His basic cover story for the CDC flip on masks, plus what he had to say yesterday is a variant came along. We'll get to that. Calling on states and local governments to do what the federal government can't quite do yet. He doesn't believe, which is impose mandates. He's promoting mandates. There's no question about it. And then throwing off some funny money incentives like $100 to get vaccinated. Here's Joe Biden on the booster shot, too. This was a question that was asked, plus the mask wearing matter.
Mr. President,
how long do you think it might be necessary to wear a mask? And at what point do you think people might have to have a booster shot? Thank you.
I said in my talk, the booster shot is not needed now. It is possible that it'll be needed later. I don't know. The science hasn't dictated that yet. And the first part of your question?
I think people might have to wear a mask again.
Well, if you notice, a lot of places people don't have to wear masks. Let's get that straight. The places where people have gotten vaccinated, where we have a high vaccination rate, people do not have to wear masks at all. Like some of you were with me yesterday when I was up in Lehigh Valley. Didn't have to wear a mask there. Don't have to mask if you come home to Delaware with me. I know you love doing that. But you don't have to wear a mask. The places, people are probably going to have to wear masks in those communities where the high rate of unvaccinated stays high and they don't move. They don't move to getting vaccinated. But I think you're going to find the patience of businesses and the patience of a lot of other people running thin. Because the fact is, if you had high vaccination rates, we wouldn't be in this spot right now.
God, it's all you unvaccinated people's fault. We wouldn't be here right now.
Well, it's interesting. First of all, on the mask explanation that he provided, that is not consistent with what the CDC put out the other day. They didn't say anything about community rates of vaccination.
No.
Didn't say anything. So now he's just making things up as he goes along, which is his want. And by the way, in addition to that, so that one, he's at odds with CDC. Two is, with respect to this being solely the repository of the unvaccinated, story from Yahoo News, as of Thursday, 882 people were tied to the Provincetown outbreak. In Massachusetts. Among those living in Massachusetts, 74% of them were fully immunized, yet officials said the vast majority were also reporting symptoms. So these breakthrough cases. So how does the Biden administration or the COVIDians, how do they explain that? This is all about an endemic of the unvaccinated. This is all focusing on the unvaccinated, shaming the unvaccinated, imposing your will on the unvaccinated. Well, then you have these breakthrough cases and this Cape Cod example that informed, according to the reporting, the CDC decision, the reversal on mask wearing. That includes of the outbreak, 74% that were vaccinated fully. How do you square the circle there?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. And how do all you union members feel? Because you're president now. You know, he's going to mandate federal employees get vaccinated or face testing every week. And I don't think Biden's going to stop there. I think he's going to mandate vaccines for the entire country coming up, don't you, Dan? Or try to?
No, I don't think so. Because, one, I mean, he's waiting for DOJ guidance on that. But more importantly, why do you need to do that when you have the state and localities doing your bidding for you? Why would you do that and then face litigation in places like Florida that are not going to abide that federal mandate that will challenge whatever, any sort of opinion that DOJ would give the president that would green light him moving in that direction? You're going to receive pushback. So this is why, hey, you know, I don't know if I can do it, but DOJ says you can do it, so why don't you guys do it so I don't have to? Now, which was his message at the press conference yesterday. That's where this is going, I believe. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Peter Ducey over at Fox News, or Fax News, Joe Biden calls him. he pressed Biden as he was trying to depart the presser on this matter again, on the reversal, and here's what... Well, here's how that exchange went.
You made it sound like a vaccine was the ticket to losing the mask forever. And
that is true at the time, because I thought there were people who were going to understand that getting vaccinated made a gigantic difference. And what happened was, new variant came along, they didn't get vaccinated, it was spread more rapidly, and more people were getting sick. That's the difference.
Yeah, a new variant came along. Along came a variant. That explanation really is problematic on a number of levels. One is, you know, we know that among the high risk category of Americans, it's a very small percentage that are not vaccinated. Number one. Number two, we have views from the scientific community, like from Dr. Robert Malone, who is credited as one of the inventors of the mRNA technology. We've had him on the show. He has been now, you know, tarred as an anti-vaxxer, which he's not. He's actually a vaccine devotee, thus the focus of his work on things like inventing the mRNA technology that informs the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. He suggests that what's happening, without getting too technical, with these breakthrough cases is antibody-dependent enhancement. As the vaccine wanes over time in terms of its protective capacity, it enhances the virus's ability to replicate. He describes what we're in now as the worst possible situation, but not for the reasons that you're hearing from the Biden administration.
What the data seem to suggest is those who've received Pfizer, which is probably the least immunogenic of the three, in terms of durability, length of protection, people that are now in the waning phase of the immune response to the Pfizer vaccine seem to be getting infected. Notice they keep talking about Pfizer and not about the other two. So this suggests, this is exactly what you would anticipate, is the window of greatest susceptibility to antibody-dependent enhancement is in this long tapering phase as the vaccine response declines. And I think Dr. Fauci is being very disingenuous. I don't know what else to say. I mean, we could say he's lying, whatever. I'm accused of being now an anti-vaxxer and promoting disinformation. But to my eyes, the government is obfuscating what's happening here. And I don't mean to sound alarmist, but what that seems to be rolling out is the worst case scenario, where the vaccine in the waning phase is causing virus to replicate more efficiently than it would otherwise, which is what is we call antibody dependent enhancement, is what the word is. And people have been warning about this since the outset of this rushed vaccine campaign.
And so what Dr. Malone would recommend be done if he were, you know, in those rooms with the Dr. Fauci's of the world making those decisions or making those recommendations to policymakers?
If the data are consistent with ADE, we have to stop the vaccine campaign. We have to pivot to expediting as much as possible drug treatments, which have been largely blocked and suppressed at the FDA level, particularly for repurposed drugs. And
yes, which is, you know, raises the issue of ivermectin in particular yet again. But it's fascinating. I know just playing that clip will get us banned on YouTube and Twitter and so on and so forth. But, you know, science, science, science. I love the fact that the people who consider themselves men and women science, men and women of science, so many of them, believe that they can just say, like Nancy Pelosi does, science, 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 like it's a magic incantation. And that constitutes being on scientifically solid ground. And it doesn't. And this is why you need to hear from voices like Dr. Robert Malone. And if you want to suggest that he's wrong, that's not what's happening. And he, unlike so many, doesn't offer his views with metaphysical certitude. He makes the point if the data is consistent with what it seems to indicate, he doesn't have access to all the data right now. But from the reporting being done, this is what he sees happening. If Tony Fauci or somebody else would like to disagree with him, then feel free to do so. But how about a disagreement or a discussion on the merits, as opposed to then Tony Fauci going on to one of his selected cable news shows to, you know, be fawned over by the usual pundits and offer his, you know, we're just trying to save lives bromides. I mean, it, could it be that what is being proposed by the administration is 180 degrees off, not just a little off, but 180 degrees off, as Robert Malone seems to be indicating?
And they're saying this morning, the CDC, that the Delta variant is as communicable as chickenpox. Like, they're scaring us now. You just, even if you, you know, you may be asymptomatic, but you can spread it as quickly as you can chickenpox to other people. I just don't see the exit ramp to this, Dan.
Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, take a quick call. Mike in Plano, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. You know, I like when these doctors speak out against medical tyranny and they try to push back against the branch COVIDians. My only problem with them sometimes is that they seem too tepid about it. And you can tell, you heard it from that last guy you played and from others when they say, oh, I don't mean to be too alarmist or I don't mean to sound political. Like, don't be afraid to go there. We're in a highly politicized world. And, you know, sometimes you just have to go there in order to speak the truth. And even with Dr. Fauci, they're afraid to criticize Dr. Fauci or label him anything other than just, you know, a guy that's kind of in over his own head. Like, he just call the guy a crook and a guy that's probably a criminal. Just don't be afraid to go there.
Yeah. Right. And when did the CDC start running the country? Because that's what's happening right now. These are recommendations. The CDC also recommends don't smoke. Have one drink. I mean, I can go on and on with that list of CDC recommendations, but we don't, you know, hold it as the holy grail and change everything that we're doing because masks are back now in Illinois. And it's so ridiculous because we're having Lollapalooza.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. You're not going to mandate that Cliff Clavin get the vaccine. That's the American Postal Workers Union response to what Joe Biden had to say.
Well, maybe they shouldn't vote Democratic anymore, huh?
Well, I would love to. I'd love to hear from the P-hat acolytes and the Dem socialists and the Dem socialists they support. I would love to hear them criticize the public sector unions resisting the vaccine mandates as killing grandmas, grandpas, and the immunocompromised. Please go after them. I'd like to see it, and that, you know, that would prove your intellectual consistency and what a good person you are out there saving lives. The Postal Workers Union saying, while the leadership continues to encourage postal workers to voluntarily get vaccinated, It's not the role of the federal government to mandate vaccinations for the employers we represent. At this time, the APWU opposes the mandating of COVID-19 vaccinations in relation to U.S. postal workers. How about that?
Well, it's coming here to Chicago. I mean, yesterday, so Governor Jelly Belly has a few press conferences. And then after that, of course, to deliver the bad news, he never does it on camera. He always does it through a statement saying that mask mandates are returning to all state facilities. And then they're deciding whether or not to make vaccinations mandatory for all state employees and for city workers. Mayor Lightfoot's deciding that right now, too. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Now, he has not offered us $100 to get vaccinated Bill de Blasio. No, well, not yet.
Yeah,
and, you know, Governor Walz in Minnesota.
We know these things, incentives don't work. But, you know, it's, again, given the appearance of doing something in furtherance of what you say is necessary. Joe Biden, though, making it clear to his P-hat acolytes out there in the hustings, like Jelly Belly, like Triple Threat, that he would like them to move in the direction they're moving.
Push for vaccine mandates in states, private companies, schools. Do you want to see those entities pass vaccine mandates?
Well, I'd like to see them continue to move in that direction. And that's why I pointed out. I had asked the Justice Department to determine whether that is they're able to do that legally. And they can. Local communities can do that. Local businesses can do that. It's still a question whether the federal government can mandate the whole country. I don't know that yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not just governors and mayors of the COVIDian ilk that are moving in that direction. It's also what was referenced there, schools. Well, private companies, we know, the Googles and the Netflixes of the world. But schools, you think you're in a fight over mask wearing? What about vaccines and testing? Remember back in March, when this instructional video was first posted, we brought it to your attention because we suspected that if there were any bumps in the road, this is where we'd be going, the L.A. Unified School District leading the way.
Yeah, and here they are again.
L.A. Unified School District, along with Microsoft, developing at the time and then providing a nice educational video that would essentially offer mandate a vaccine passport, if you will, at the K-12 level. Here was the video at the time.
There's never been anything like this virus in our lifetime. Often, it's hard to see the effects it's having on our children. Has this conversation taken place in your home?
Mom, I'm scared about going back to school. I don't want to get sick, and I don't want to get you and Dad sick.
Oh my God.
Our scientists tell us there are three things we must do to stay safe.
Wash
wear masks, make sure we social distance, and wash our hands.
Yay!
And now, your school, with the help of Microsoft Corporation, has created another. Introducing Daily Pass, your exclusive ticket for safely going back to school. Each week, you can schedule your free on-campus COVID test. The results are displayed in your Daily Pass. And if you choose to take your test off campus, you can post the results in your Daily Pass. And the moment vaccinations are available, you'll simply be able to schedule yours through your Daily Pass. But the real magic is your daily health check. Just answer a few simple health questions every day, and like magic, your entrance ticket appears.
Welcome back.
Welcome to school.
And everything's fine in the world. Communist country.
So, how did it go?
Dad, I have to admit, I was scared at first, but then I felt so safe. It was so good to be back. Thanks for keeping me safe.
Oh my
I love
God.
You so much.
Oh. Let's make out.
Thank you for being the caring family. We're working together with all in the school community to bring children back to school as safely as possible. We're looking forward to seeing their smiling faces back in school where they belong. Thank you.
Well, those heroes at the L.A. Unified School District announced yesterday that will require all students and employees who are returning for in-person instruction to participate in weekly COVID-19 testing, regardless of vaccination status.
And this is only going to end when people stand, you know, fight back and refuse to comply. They're going to walk all over you folks as they're doing right now. I mean, where are we living that the government is offering you $100 to get vaccinated? And I just want to get this out, because like, whores do things for money. So I think, Dan, if people sign up to get a COVID test for $100, they're giving their bodies to you know, a greater cause that they think. They shouldn't get jabbed in the arm. They should get jabbed somewhere else, if you know what I mean.
To get vaccinated, not get tested.
No, to get vaccinated, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're going to be a COVID whore, that should be part of it. And they want singles. Give it to them in singles, not a Visa gift card.
And when you go... Yeah, when you go to get vaccinated for your $100, tell the person vaccinating you that the bitch better have my money. Galesburg, Illinois, School District 205, Superintendent John Asplund. Galesburg, that's in Illinois. Maytag used to be there.
Maytag, I remember that. My sister was born there. Lovely Galesburg.
Galesburg, Illinois, School District 205, Superintendent John Asplund has indicated that... There's a new ID badge policy. School staff now have the option to change from the customary white ID badge to a yellow ID badge to indicate that they've received the COVID vaccine. They're going to use yellow badges for identification in Galesburg School District 205. He sent an email out. Process will begin on Monday, August 2nd. Entirely optional at this point in time. Proof of vaccination does not give you any additional benefits at this point in time. But there could be a point in the future where mask requirements may be lessened for those who can prove they are fully vaccinated and thus the yellow ID badge.
Well, it's the same thing that's going on in Glenbrook North and Glenbrook South, District 225, I believe. At lunchtime, if you're vaccinated, you sit. This is a proposal right now. You sit at a certain table. If you're unvaccinated, you're on the other side of the cafeteria. Just picture that, folks.
So,
table.
The identification badges, I would query teachers, administrative staff, and parents of students alike. Are you going to, abide the reimposition of the mask mandate, abide the push for vaccinations, perhaps even a mandatory vaccine, as Joe Biden would like your local school district to impose? And if not... Or in addition to, how about identification badges? How about a daily pass like LA Unified School District was rolling out before they sort of moderated it to be the weekly testing mandate, regardless of vaccination status?
Or what about the just cancel school again? Let's try this a third year because it worked out so well the past 2 years. I mean, I honestly think I am going to have a heart attack. I cannot take this anymore. 312. Oh, sorry. You know the number. All right.
Candace in Mount Pleasant. You're in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, you guys. Amy, you look pretty in your commercials. It's effective. So I hope you sell a lot of Balanced Nature.
I need some right now. Trust me.
I just want to let you guys know that we have a We the People rally August 6th up in Wisconsin, noon to 1:30 at the state capitol. There's a corner of Mifflin and North Carroll, and I hope you guys will show up because we're trying to pressure Speaker Robin Voss and Senator Lemieux to do a forensic audit like Arizona. So I hope people will show up from Illinois and newbies from Illinois who moved here from Wisconsin and everybody else who listens.
Okay, thanks, Candace. Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Good morning, Danny. Thank you for taking my call. I'll tell you, when you listen to that recording, that advertisement, you can just hear the rotten propaganda. The government has got all these big techs and like this Microsoft and all of them all involved and all, and they'll take this thing to the level where you want total power and everything, any way they can get it. They're all in cahoots on it, and they won't let you hear a word from the other side where there's some difficulties and problems with kids getting the vaccine and that. not to mention anybody else, a future problem coming. But that when you listen to that, I want to puke again because it's sick. It's sick to listen to that, how they put this thing together. It's propaganda.
Thanks for the call, Craig. Appreciate it. Marvin in Burlington.
Hi, good morning. It's very distressful, but I think some leader somewhere in the future is going to have to do what Reagan did with these air traffic controllers with the teachers' unions. They're so far off the rails and so separate from average, I think, what I believe, folks trying to raise a family. They're two different directions. And I got to believe sooner or later people are going to have enough. I mean, Governor Walker did it up here in Wisconsin, and I know eventually it caught up to him, but we were a lot better off for it. I mean, to have that much power over our families and our way of life, I think is it's not what this country was meant to be, and it's certainly not one of the things that caused us to become a great nation. And I just wish that Americans would wake up. I pray for it every morning.
Thanks for the call, Marvin. And it's this expansion of power that doesn't see much future in retraction, does it? It seems to be there's a lot of incentive and desire to make the expansion of government power that occurred over the last 18 months a permanent feature of American society. That's a problem.
And to have people live in constant fear. I mean, think about this. We have Lollapalooza, which is the world's largest gathering of folks, and Chicago's the host of it. And yet now we're right when it ends, you know that they're going to implement a mask mandate, even if you're vaccinated for indoors. But they're still not letting parents in Chicago public schools go to watch their kids' volleyball games or girls' swim meets. They're banned. Parents are banned, and fans and scouts. But we're letting the whole world come to Chicago. We're doing other things, but we can't let some parents who could wear masks and socially distant, and same with fans, come in. And nobody cares about it. Nobody gives a root, you know what, about the children. And it's driving me crazy because this is year three.
Dave, formerly of Elgin, Illinois, now to a better life somewhere else. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how's it going? I had to pull over and vomit when you were playing that commercial before. It was all over I-4 down here, so I'll let you guys go.
All right, thanks for the call, Dave. Hopefully, some of those IDOT workers that are, or not, where did he say he was?
In Southern Illinois, I thought.
Some of those.
Yeah, the IDOT workers.
The state workers, hopefully, that'll come clean up the vomit. We'll be vaccinated.
Yeah, and then they'll be vaccinated. And if they're not vaccinated, it's going to be mandated soon.
David in Lansing.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Almost every show I listen to you on, I hear Tea Party and MAGA types complain and whine, like, we're getting sense, we're not getting the information out there. Do what I do. I mean, here's the products I don't use: Twitter, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Google, which includes YouTube, and I'm trying to get rid of Microsoft. I almost got the whole list done. Stop giving them money. Stop using their products, the sensors, and sell the stock in their company and stop whining. There's enough MAGA and Tea Party to crush those companies. They're big companies, but we're like 40% of the country. We can crush them. Come on, people. There's MeWe, Parler. There's BitChute as an alternative to YouTube. I mean, there's all kinds of alternatives out there. Stop whining and put your money towards the people that support your opinion. Salem Media. I mean, you listen to Salem. Why don't you do the same with all your other medias and your Facebooks and all this stuff instead of just whining about it?
All right. Thanks for the call, David. John in Bridgeport.
Yeah, real quick, Amy, real quick. How honest are these stats coming out of the CDC with the spike levels? I just want to know your opinion on it, because it just seems like that more people are getting vaccinated, the higher the numbers are of people coming down with COVID. Thanks for the call.
Well, right, the cases are up compared to what they were a month ago, but what they were a month ago was hardly anything. And so that's why you can say when you go from 0.4 to 1.5 that they've tripled. but I think that they're reliable. I mean, I don't see any reason that they're fudging the numbers. But the focus should be on hospitalizations and deaths. We're in a great place. We're so much better than we were last summer by the tune of 52%.
Is John a friend of yours by any chance?
No. I did go to prom with him.
I was going to say because I don't know. I didn't know that you were our resident statistician until John from Bridgeport called.
The only reason why I study is because I just am in those press conferences with Dr. Awardi and Dr. Nzike.
Yeah, no, I got it. Okay. John wants Amy to break down numbers. Got it. Well, no, I got it. No,
why are you feeling slighted, Dan?
No.
I'm going to break down Supreme Court cases soon, too, there, buddy. You better watch it.
I found it. I find it delightful. I really do.
Okay, Dan Richard.
Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis offered the following cri de coeur to those who want to live in a free society, a free America, during his remarks at the American Legislative Exchange Council. Listen up.
Did you not get the CDC's memo? I don't see you guys complying. And I say that jokingly, but I think that that may be a sign of potentially seeking to do more things into the future. And I think it's very important that we say unequivocally no to lockdowns, no to school closures, no to restrictions, and no mandates. Floridians are free to choose, and all Americans should be free to choose how they govern their affairs, how they take care of themselves and our families. And they should not be consigned to live, regardless of which state in the union, consigned to live in a Faucian dystopia in which we're governed by the whims of bureaucratic authorities who care little for our freedom, little for our aspirations, and little for our happiness. No more. We can't let it happen going forward.
And the sound of two hands
clapping.
That's
me. You're giving them a standing ovation.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. You're going to take DeSantis's words to heart, and I don't just mean if you're a Floridian. It's interesting, too, again, the audience, for those not familiar, the American Legislative Exchange Council is state legislators from around the country. So that's who was clapping. Now, these are center-right state legislators, generally. The American Legislative Exchange Council center-right organization. But nonetheless, those are policymakers in the audience. That's the good news. The bad news, of course, is there's at least an equal number of policymakers that feel quite differently than those who attended the remarks given by Ron DeSantis. And let me give you an example of what the opposing viewpoint is. David Frum, who's classic please clap Republican, who's now become indistinguishable from the left, writes in The Atlantic, does Biden's America have a breaking point? Biden's America produces 70% of the country's wealth and then sees that wealth transferred to support Trump's America, which is fine. That's what citizens of one nation do for another. But the reciprocal part of the bargain is not being upheld. Will blue America ever decide it's had enough of being put medically at risk by people and places whose bills it pays? Check yourself. Have you? So now you have the suggestion, not just that the unvaccinated be marked with the scarlet UV. Now you have the suggestion that, we're going to match up people's voting records with their wealth or with the income taxes paid. And then it will be based on what? The breaking point for the bills of base. The redistribution is fine, says David Frum, but then what's your point? Is your point that at some point, Biden's America, we should break things out by taxes paid And so whoever has paid the most taxes as a cohort gets to decide public policy? I thought this was the one man, one vote crowd. Now it's going to be the landed aristocracy, the wealthy, that formally determine what you can and can't do. It's bad enough to have a political ruling class. How about, which of course the wealthy are generally part of to begin with, but how about making it formal? That's where this is going. And by the way, it's not just David Frum. You had Margaret Hoover was a former aide to Rudy Giuliani. She has done this restart of firing line. She's awful. It's a disgrace to Bill Buckley's legacy and that show's legacy. This is what Margaret Hoover said on Sunday with Clinton Foundation Donor Zero. If you're going to get government-provided health care, if you're going to get VA treatment, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, anything, and Social Security obviously isn't health care, you should be getting the vaccine, okay, because we're going to have to take care of you on the back end. Really? In order to get health care, medical treatment at a VA, we're going to add an additional rider to the contract we provide veterans that you have to get vaccinated to. Not that maybe it's a good idea. We're not talking about whether it's a good idea or not. We're talking about you have to or this gets taken away, including a VA access to veterans? Really?
People who served our country, defended our democracy, they're going to deny them?
With an after-the-fact condition for that health care. This is important whether anything approximately this comes to pass or not, because it gives you a look into the mind of these people, these imperious power mongers.
Yeah, and they're not going to stop until they have full control.
Or until they are – well, yeah, they're not going to stop until they're stopped, I guess, is the same way of – is a sort of corollary to what you're suggesting. You're right. They are not going to stop. This is their disposition. They will prosecute their case until they are stopped. And this is what's happening in the House, too. Nancy Pelosi imposing this mask mandate and threatening fines. Capitol Police initially threatening imprisonment, arrest and imprisonment if you're caught not wearing a mask on Capitol grounds. And they sort of walk that back. Well, Ted Cruz over in the Senate wasn't having any of it. He took to the well of the Senate to offer these remarks.
Speaker Pelosi has decreed to members of the House of Representatives, elected by the people, that if you dare walk onto the floor of the House of Representatives without a mask, I, Speaker Pelosi, shall fine you. Who the hell is she to be fining members of the House? But you know what? She's not done with that. She's not done with disrespecting our Constitution, disrespecting our democratic system that elects leaders. She goes further. To the good men and women who work here in the United States Capitol, we are surrounded by men and women who have chosen to come and work for the public good. And here's what Speaker Pelosi has decreed. If you dare walk in the hallway without a mask, I, Speaker Pelosi, will arrest you. I will put you in jail. I will fine you. That is an absolute and complete abuse of power. She has no authority to disrespect the men and women who work here, to threaten you with physical harm, to threaten you with imprisonment. And why does she do so? She does so for one reason, political theater.
Right, political theater in advance of power. Ed in Oak Brook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, you know what? I don't like the guy who was saying, proposing the extra, you know, the taxes and so forth. But I've been thinking about this for a long time. Let's say I'm paying, I don't know, maybe a couple hundred thousand dollars in taxes a year just for a federal. But why do I get the same vote as some guy in the city of Chicago that just receives money from the government for doing absolutely nothing? So So what I'm proposing, and I've been thinking about this, is that the people that pay the taxes should get extra votes. I'm all for that because we're getting killed by these people that are just getting handouts, and the government is giving them the handouts that'll keep voting for, let's say, these jerk Democrats. So you know what? I think this would be a big surprise for the guy that's proposing that, because he's going to be shocked to the core when he finds out the people that are actually paying the money to this garbage government actually has some kind of thought, but they have no vehicle to do it other than that voting box. And who knows if that's even legal anymore.
So, Ed, since you've thought a lot about this, how many more votes would Tom Steyer, let's say, get than you? How many more votes would Jeff Bezos get than you if this was going to be votes determined by wealth?
Well, you know what? That's a very good question. Okay, that's a very good question. But let me tell you this. I don't think Jeff Bezos actually believes the crap that he's selling, that he's telling you on the media.
Okay,
now, that idiot Snyder, he might be.
Yeah,
but I don't think so, because he made his money off of working hard. And it got to bother him that people that are not doing anything are absolutely, you know, just ripping this country off.
So you understand that, like, and just put in a Chicago context, the wealthiest areas of Chicago are dominated by who, Ed? The left or the right?
I would say the left.
Right.
But a left, no, I'm saying the left when they talk to you, but I think deep down.
Oh, you think deep down? I'm sorry. Look at who represents the North Shore. Is it Republicans?
Who represents the No, they don't.
Right. So the wealthy are actually voting in the Marxists. That's what's happening. And you're suggesting that the wealthy should have more votes based on the income taxes they pay than you, and you should have more votes based on than somebody who doesn't pay taxes. And so here's what ultimately happens. First of all, I reject the idea out of hand, but here's what would actually happen functionally, even if you wanted to pursue this. The same thing that's happening now. The uber wealthy and the dependents of transfer payments would squeeze out whatever extra votes you got, Ed. That's what would happen.
But you know what? Right now, I'm just getting beat up every day, and I'm paying every day.
I understand the frustration.
At least I can start swinging a little bit.
I understand.
And I think when I go to these car shows and whatever else I go to, I don't see anyone supporting this madman that's in the White House now. Okay, I don't. When I talk to these people, they all are totally against them. Especially, well, I've always said this on the air too. The liberals have not felt any pain yet at all. You know what? Most of them, like you said, live in these high-rise towers, and they don't have cars, so they don't know what gas is, but they do complain about the cost of food and everything else. And they can't connect that dot, as you always say, of increased energy costs, increased labor, and so forth, why their food costs are going up. They can't connect that dot. In other words, the liberals, even in Hinsdale, have not felt the pain. As soon as these idiots start feeling pain, then they'll start waking up. But until then, they're not.
All right, thanks for the call, Ed.
No, they love this newfound power where they can tell everybody what to do and when to do it.
Well, people of a certain predilection always have. I mean, this is sort of the nature of man conversation. And Ted Cruz, as part of the remarks, I played a portion of what he had to say. The other portion included references to Lord Acton's scholarship, his writings about absolute power corrupting absolutely, and that the idea that the rich should have more de jure power in society was the path to destruction, to borrow a phrase, road to serfdom. And that's where people who are so inclined want to take this. And they're certainly trying, certainly seizing this COVID opportunity, aren't they?
Victor, they can't quit it.
Victor at Midway.
Yeah, it's morning, guys. I just think we're overlooking the number one problem. We're concerned about, like, what rights we're going to have and what policies we're going to have moving forward. But we're overlooking, if we don't go back to fix that election that was rigged, we're not going to have any say-so in policies or anything else unless that's fixed. Because those are the same people who rigged the election, the people with all the globalist money. You know, so I don't know why people are overlooking the number one problem. We have to go back and fix that problem
well, we're not going to have any rights. That's just, I mean, we're talking about fairy tales right now.
Well, Victor, thanks for the call. Although, you know, the landscape has changed since November of last year with election reform laws that have been passed at the state level, with the essentially blocking of the Democrat-Socialist effort to engineer a federal takeover of elections through H.R. 1, S.R. 1. So that's DOA at this point. So, you know, 2022, I'm not suggesting it's going to be problem-free, and I'm not suggesting there are legitimate questions to ask about 2020, legitimate avenues of inquiry, but 2022 is not going to be the same as 2020, just based on what Texas and Georgia have done, for example, and what other states are in process of doing. Greg in Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, guys. I disagree with Ed. I think the rule should be if you do not vote, you pay a higher tax rate, a substantially higher tax rate. It'll get people off their duffs and out to the polls, seeing how you got, what, weeks to do it. You can mail it and you can drop it off at Dropbox and everywhere else and get involved in the system that is, you know, running their lives now. I mean, you look at these other countries where you get, what, 90% of the people who live there vote, or the registered voters or people of age voting. Here, it takes an act of God to get 50% out. It's just astonishing. Make them pay. That'll get them off their duffs.
Well, Greg, I mean, I hate to argue with both Ed and Greg in the same little block here, but...
you can do it.
Do you think those other countries that mandate voter participation are better governed countries?
No. I'm not saying that are mandated. I'm just saying, places
that's how you get 90% in a lot of places.
Well, people who, look what happened in Iraq when they first got the vote. People were coming out. You had people coming in, you know, basically on stretchers because they've never had, you know, a free election before. It was
right.
vote for me, and then Saddam Hussein gets 99% of it. When they get freedom, they vote.
This starts from a premise that I just reject, that, there's a magic number of participation that will produce better results. I mean, do you think that the people who need to be bribed to go vote or need, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks mail and so on and so forth, you think that those people are helping to produce a better result? I just reject this vote philosophy that we're trying to get as many people to vote as possible. I want informed people to vote, including informed leftists, the John Kenneth Galbraith liberals.
Yeah.
Go ahead and vote. But I'm not here to block anybody from voting. Obviously, the franchises should be enjoyed equally. But if you choose not to exercise your franchise, well, that's fine. That's sort of a vote, too. And it's sort of indicative of the larger culture. And yes, I know what you're speaking to, which is complacency and ignorance. But I don't think you can mandate complacency and ignorance out of the process. And now you're saying the complacent and the ignorant will have to go to the polls and pick whichever name sounds better anyway, because there'll be a penalty to not do so.
Yeah, and that's the problem, too, is that, you know, I mean, I know people who don't know who their congressman is. It's like, you know, how could you not know who your congressman is? But, I mean, you know, I guess what my problem is, you know, our government, every aspect of it, local, federal, and otherwise, is becoming so big, they are absolutely starting to run our lives completely, or they're trying to do it. And you know what? It's just, you know, this has got to stop. And, as things go on, this is going to end badly, you know?
Well, thanks for the call, Greg. I mean, I get the frustration. I just think we need to be careful about what we think the remedy is, what we think policies are that would improve the situation. I'm not sure that, well, I am pretty sure actually that the policies proposed here would not. And so let's not do that, but let's also focus on the fact that, yes, as Andy McCarthy wrote about eloquently in National Review today, the idea that the Centers for Control, or what used to be called the CDC, are running the country, sort of providing the political cover for the unbelievable expansion of federal power and federal funny money, the unbelievable expansion of state and local power, that is a huge problem.
Yeah, they're not elected officials, and I want to know who these people are.
Yeah.
I want to know names.
Well, we know who they are. Dr. Rochelle Walensky, Dr. Tony Fauci.
Right.
I mean, we know who they are. This is not a secret. This is not complicated. The question is, what are we going to do about politicians, those we do elect, who use, these individuals as cover for their political ambitions? Are you going to replace them? And I'll tell you what, it would be a really interesting test. I mean, you want to talk about a shockwave to the system. If, and Gavin Newsom is thrown all in with these renewed mandates. I mean,
good.
he's a tried and true lockdowner.
Good.
So if he were to lose that recall vote next month and Larry Elder were to be elected governor of California,
could
you imagine the shockwaves that would send through the political system? That may straighten up some of these lockdowners, but it's going to take something as substantial as that, I think, to get people off of, to get the left off of this power gambit that they're on. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. One of my constant laments, generally speaking, in Illinois specifically, when will the revolt against these overreaches come? When will the revolt of a free people who want to remain free materialize? Well, Frank McCormick, as somebody who's leading a revolt, and hopefully in the K through 12 space, he is a high school teacher, historian. He's taught economics, civics, history. I believe he's in Waukegan. And he's also the writer of a blog, chalkboardheresy.com, chalkboardheresy.com. He is taking a public stand against critical race theory as the orthodoxy in K through 12 curriculum. And he joins us now. Frank, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for having me.
You're in you're in Waukegan?
That's correct.
All right. So you teach, do you teach at Waukegan High School?
Yes, I do.
So this is interesting because, so Waukegan is a community that has significant populations of Black and Latino families and thus students. And I wonder if I want to know how this is being received now that you've come out and you're blogging on this and so on and so forth, because I suspect, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that maybe in communities that are actually diverse, where there's actual Latino and Black families that are lower or middle income that are trying to climb the economic ladder, that there may be more reception to what someone like you has to say than in these very wealthy, lily white school districts like Hinsdale or New Trier, where you just have a bunch of people hell-bent out of a sense of misplaced guilt to destroy America. What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that there's definitely a lot more frustration and anger with schools than in some of these other communities. People feel that oftentimes schools have failed them, and you know, that they see more of the problem of public education in their daily lives, the lack of choice, and these things. I haven't necessarily heard, because we've a lot of this has transpired over the summer. I haven't heard too much yet. I anticipate this year will be interesting, given that I've chosen to come out and speak publicly. But I have been allegedly, from an inside source, reported to administration for having, you know, what was referred as problematic political beliefs.
Oh my God! Do they, are you fear that they're going to fire you by any chance?
You know, I'm not sure. I know that they have to be very careful with that because there still are First Amendment protections outside of school for teachers. But it would not surprise me if they tried. It's already been expressed to me that it's problematic, just my position, my thoughts, my beliefs. I don't know what to expect.
Are you a member of the union?
Yes. We're basically all kind of.
Yeah,
well,
be,
you have to be, right?
Well, I say that because it'll be interesting to see what the union does, the posture that they take if the administration comes after you in any material way. You know, a dues-paying member, they're duty-bound to protect your interests. It'll be interesting to see how vociferous they are in trying to protect you.
Yeah, It will be, and I've actually spoken to them in advance. I didn't – a lot of the stuff I learned in the last few months, but I didn't know, for example, the union's position on critical race theory and some of these topics. And so, you know, it's I'm kind of in a catch-22. Do I pull my money out and leave because of their kind of recent political activity, or do I lose protection that I may need for speaking publicly? It's a difficult situation to be in, for sure.
No, stay. Not only because you paid for that protection, but also because it will be very illustrative of the state of affairs, what the union decides to do vis-a-vis you. I mean, I hate to use you as a guinea pig here, but sure. You know. So, what was the trigger for you to decide to come out publicly, put up this blog, and start talking openly about this?
This process started, I think, about a good year ago. I started thinking about what I wanted to do and where I wanted to be at the end of my career. Did I want to be someone who had collected a paycheck, gone along with the system, and retired? I mean, that's certainly a very comfortable way out, and it's a comfortable way to live your life. Or did I want to really make a difference in not just as a teacher, but in the system as a whole? I think last summer, after the George Floyd riots, what I saw was this ideological underpinning behind them. And schools really started to mobilize politically after that and started to repeat the same rhetoric about, you know, oppressed classes and oppressor classes and deconstructing various things and liberation and revolution. And I worried about the social cohesion of our country. I kind of saw those riots as a preview of what our nation could face on a greater scale in the future. And I thought to myself, I said, man, if this takes hold in schools, we're going to see generation after generation graduating with these, you know, radical underpinnings that may lead to future social tension. And I realized someone has to put the brakes on this. And it took me probably a good 12 months to, I guess, muster the courage and think about how I wanted to approach this. And I just said, I just got to come out and just start writing and speaking as best I'm able to, and letting people know kind of what's going on and what the risks inherent in that are.
Well, did any of your administrators, you know, after the George Floyd incident, when you got back to school, whether it was remote or in person or hybrid, did they say you need to talk about this and you need to talk about social justice warriors?
I don't think there were any official mandates, but there was definitely a direction that these conversations needed to be happening. We had a newly established Department of Equity and Inclusion, which a lot of school districts have created these kind of their political departments. And so emails would start to regularly go out about kind of these topics as they were happening and how to have conversations about them and what to say and what not to say. So you definitely got the sense that there was a direction that they wanted people to go with on this. And a lot of it, too, is teacher-imposed. You know, teachers are very progressive in general. 92% to 97% identify as liberal progressive. And so a lot of this is very difficult to control, you know, when people want to pass laws banning XYZ or control, you know, because the population you're dealing with teachers isn't going to necessarily follow those. They're going to bring it in anyway.
What's your relationship been like with your colleagues up until this point? Because I just want to note what it was prior to you being labeled a white supremacist, which is coming.
It was okay. I think they had always known where I stood politically, so that definitely creates some tension because you're kind of an outlier and you're pushing back against the status quo, but generally good. I anticipate that it'll change, and I will be labeled, you know, as you said, these things. But there's also colleagues, too, that feel like I do. And so a lot of people have come to me and kind of said, thank you for coming out and saying this. I've been afraid, or I didn't know what to say. And so it's having a mixed effect thus far.
You know, I just go back to this math teacher out of top private school in New York, when he came out, as it were, and wrote this op-ed about what was going on in his school, Grace Church School in New York, in Manhattan, he just said, I'm being told to treat my students differently based on their race, and I'm not going to do that. Why is that so difficult?
Yes. Oh, Paul Ross. Yeah, I actually speak with him pretty regularly. And
but I thought that was just such an eloquent summary of what is being imposed. And I'm not going to treat my students differently based on their race. How is that not the righteous position? And why are so many people afraid to take it?
I think that what we're dealing with, and this is why I've kind of described, myself as a heretic, is this is an orthodoxy. This is a new religious movement. And I don't say that, facetiously. I really do believe it. And it's been heavily influenced by kind of the Marxist tradition, where you look at people in terms of their collective kind of social class as oppressor and oppressed. So there's a righteousness in having these beliefs for the people that believe it, because they believe that they are representing or speaking on behalf of an oppressed group. And by treating them differently, by treating them as that collectively, they're almost elevating them into a protected special status. These are chosen, protected people that I am advocating on behalf of against the evil, manipulative, powerful forces of the other class. And there's this definitely sense of self-righteousness and missionary purpose behind it, which I think blinds people to the potential damages it could have when you treat people based on their immutable characteristics. Even if your intentions are good, it leads to a dark place.
What about parents of your, I mean, the relationship you have with your students, I don't know how long you've been at Waukegan, but students and parents as well. I mean, just nice to establish a baseline with all the stakeholders here to see how that changes once you start to express yourself on this topic.
Yeah, I've always had great relationships with my students. I have former students that I still keep in touch with to this day that will call me for advice or reach out to me. That's all been very good. And, my goal is not to, I don't want to bring this into the classroom, because that's actually what I'm kind of trying to keep out of the classroom, is
right,
these rigid ideologies. I'm not sure how that will turn out, how many of them will be aware of it explicitly, how many of them will care. But I've always had good relationships with them, and I think generally gotten positive feedback from parents. Obviously, you always have, students or parents that will complain and not be happy with certain things. But that's all been very good, and I hope it stays that way. But again, it's all how it's framed. And if you're framed as an enemy, as someone who's a white supremacist, because you don't buy into the established orthodoxy, and by default that's your position, obviously that could upset people. But I'm not going to let them control the narrative on this, and I'm not going to be playing those games where I'm on the defense and trying to explain why I'm not whatever label they've decided I am.
Well, when they bring in identitarian consultants to do, like we talked about it, they're doing a Glenbard South Justice in July, watch these TED Talks, read Ibram Kendi's latest treatise, and then answer these questions in your own mind in preparation for the school year and so forth. They're doing this with administrative staff and teachers at Glenbard South. When they do that with you and your colleagues, when they say that your history class shall assign the works of Ibram Kendi and Robin DiAngelo, what do you do?
I mean, if that were the case, if they want me to assign those things, absolutely not. That's not what I teach. It's not history. I'm not in the business of ideological instruction, and I will not do it. That's a violation of my moral code and why I became a teacher. Teachers don't necessarily have a Hippocratic oath like doctors do, but I believe we should have an oath that adheres us to certain professional standards of which ideological instruction explicitly should be off the table.
He is Frank McCormick. He's a teacher at Waukegan High School, historian. He's taught civics and economics as well. He writes at chalkboardheresy.com. If you're up Waukegan way, support Frank McCormick. Then we'll see how the school year unfolds, as he said, and hopefully some teachers listening will take his example. Frank, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Yep, and we'll need to keep in touch with you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. President Biden saying that he's not ready to impose a federal vaccine mandate, but he certainly hopes that state and local units of government will.
Push for vaccine mandates in states, private companies, schools. Do you want to see those entities pass vaccine mandates?
Well, I'd like to see them continue to move in that direction, and that's why I pointed out. I had asked the Justice Department to determine whether that is they're able to do that legally. And they can. Local communities can do that. Local businesses can do that. It's still a question whether the federal government can mandate the whole country. I don't know that yet.
Oh, so don't hold your breath.
So that's the direction we're going. It's the same with masks. He certainly hopes that state and local units of government, private companies, mandate masks too. Not a third, not the booster shot yet, not yet, which is consistent with what Fauci said, runs afoul of what Pfizer originally said. But with respect to masks, yeah, absolutely.
Mr. President,
how long do you think it might be necessary to wear masks? And at what point do you think people might have to have a booster shot?
I said in my talk, the booster shot is not needed now. It is possible that it will be needed later. I don't know. The science hasn't dictated that yet. And the first part of your question?
I think people might have to wear masks again.
Well, if you notice, a lot of places people don't have to wear masks. Let's get that straight. The places where people have gotten vaccinated, where we have a high vaccination rate, people do not have to wear masks at all. Like some of you were with me yesterday when I was up in Lehigh Valley. Didn't have to wear masks there. Don't have to mask if you come home to Delaware with me. I know you love doing that. But you don't have to wear a mask. The places, people are probably going to have to wear masks in those communities where the high rate of unvaccinated stays high and they don't move. They don't move to getting vaccinated.
You know, it's interesting. People are going to probably have to move to wear masks. I thought it was a CDC guideline.
Right.
Why not defer to state and locals like you are with respect to vaccines? Well, that's up to the state and locals to decide. That's not what he said. In addition to that, what he did say is sui generis. That is not what CDC said. No. CDC made no mention of their mask guidance as based on community infection rates, which Joe Biden just sort of off the cuff said would be the determining factor as to whether the mask mandate might be imposed or not. And so it goes. For more on all this, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Brett Baer. Of course, he's the host of Fox News Special Report, 5 p.m. Chicago time, Monday through Friday. Brett, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Good morning.
Good morning. Your colleague Peter Ducey tried to get more clarity on reversal by the CDC and by extension the Biden administration on mask wearing, and all he got was a variant came along, and that's essentially the argument for these vaccine mandates that are being proposed, soft or more stringent as well. Where do you think this goes?
I think it's a real policy back and forth that we're getting into here, and there's going to be pushback in different places and different communities and different people. When you start getting into mandates, it's a different ball game. I think there's a lot of people that feel like, yes, we're all in this together trying to fight the virus, but there are still personal decisions that have to be made between you and your doctor. And I think that there's a lot of questions to be asked about the hard data that supports or doesn't these decisions. So tonight we're going to have the CDC director, Dr. Walensky, on special report for an extended conversation, and we're hoping to get people to send in social media questions, whether they're on video or just on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, and spend the time to get into the details about some of these decisions, which are major, major decisions for a country that's just been through 18 months of pandemic weariness.
Yeah, and ask her too. I mean, how can anybody trust the CDC anymore when they flip flop so many times about masks and about a variety of things?
Yeah, I think that there's the messaging here has been really rough, and I think if you look at the numbers right now, not to give too many of my questions away, but the numbers of the breakthrough cases. Number roughly in the 6,000 range, and this is above, of roughly, almost 200 million people who have been vaccinated at least one shot. And of those, the deaths are single digits, and hospitalizations are really low. So if you look at the percentages, it's something like 0.0005. Percent. And if you look at the seasonal flu, which, by the way, we haven't seen really much any of in at all, the hospitalization and death rate is at about 0.1. So we're doing a lot to obviously protect the unvaccinated. But for vaccinated people, the numbers are still really rare.
Yeah, so many questions for Dr. Walensky. I mean, and to your point, you sort of were intimating it at the your first comment, which is, why won't the CDC show its work? Why are they not making the studies available that they use to base their reversal on mask guidance?
I think that's the number one question. And that's the one when you ask Admiral Brett Giroir, who was on the task force, if you ask some of our doctors, like Marty McCary or Dr. Mark Siegel, all of them say the same thing. Listen, we're game. You just need to lay it out for us, and they have not done that yet.
One of the other things that only you can do, because, it's just you're uniquely positioned in the D.C. press corps, is, there are other doctors that have real credentials. You just mentioned a couple of them that are part of your program, that experts you rely on. That are suggesting something very different, that maybe the CDC has 180 degrees wrong. And I know these are now outlaw doctors because they're not hewing to the orthodoxy. But Dr. Robert Malone, who's credited as one of the inventors of the mRNA technology, he essentially suggested, based on the data that we're seeing and the reporting on it, that what may be happening is antibody-dependent enhancement, which is, as the vaccine enhances, as the vaccine wanes, it actually enhances the virus's ability to replicate. He suggests that if that is what's happening, based on the data, that we should be stopping the vaccination campaign because it's actually exacerbating the problem. And it'd just be nice to hear, like, somebody say, well, this is happening, these conversations or these opinions are happening in a silo. So tell me Dr. Robert Malone is wrong, fine, but then explain your position against the backdrop of or against the assertion of somebody who is, equally credentialed in this space.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, too. I think that, there's a lot of people looking at this and saying that there's more about politics, there's more about control, there's more about all this other stuff. And I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt that these scientists who've spent their life in this career are really trying to save people's lives. I think that's a place where we should start in good faith. But that doesn't mean that we can't be skeptical, or it doesn't mean that we can't ask hard questions. So I think we're going to allot a lot of time to it, and hopefully it'll be illuminating in one way or another.
Well, there's new information this morning from the CDC that, this Delta variant is now, more contagious than the chicken pox. What's the science and data behind that? Why didn't they know that months ago, because the Delta variant has been around for a long time?
Yeah, and it was in Great Britain before us. And there was all kinds of different indications. I don't know the answer to that question. I think that, some of these discoveries and this evolving kind of public policy is hurtful because the messaging gets in the way. And they keep on saying they're not flip-flopping. But, boy, when you go out and you say something definitive and then, 3 months later you're doing something completely opposite, it's tough to run a public policy operation like that.
Well, right, and you have former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb saying the Delta variant will probably run its course in the next 2 to 3 weeks, and so then are we going to be on to the Epsilon variant and the Gamma variant, and are we going to be in this merry-go-round in perpetuity, I mean, based on, the spread, and as you were pointing out, versus the, hospitalization and mortality rate. It seems to me, Holman Jenkins had a good piece earlier this week in the Wall Street Journal on the topic, and he basically said, look, we made this choice in the beginning, and we're remaking the same wrong choice right now, which is, do we try to control everyone's exposure, or do we try to control the exposure for those that are most vulnerable? You cannot control the exposure for 330 million people. You cannot stop the spread, and it was never advertised as stopping the spread, at least not initially. It was slow the spread. It was don't overwhelm the healthcare system, and somehow, speaking of mutations, that mutated into we're going to eliminate the existence of COVID, which is a from the experts that we talk to, I assume you talk to some of the same ones, is a medical impossibility.
Yeah, I think it's an important point. I mean, it was slow the spread, bring the curve down, remember?
So our flatten medical the curve, teams, yeah.
Flatten the curve so our medical teams in the hospitals can deal with it. Well, they can deal with it because they're not overflowing. The numbers of vaccinated people, as I mentioned, are minuscule, very rare. Now, can you carry the virus? Yes, you can. And so that threat, they say, for a vaccinated person to carry the virus in their nose and then give it to an unvaccinated person, thereby it gets the communities at risk. But at what point are we going to give, if you've had COVID before, some weight as well as the immunity that you have from that? And two, the hospitalization rate and death is really where we should be focused and not the percentage of cases. And those are things that I really want to get into with the CDC director.
I mean, this is going to be great. I'm glad you secured this interview. But and this may be partly a question for her, but probably more so a question for the politicians on the Hill. And I wonder if you've heard anything on this topic. I mean, is there talk among the members of Congress and the Biden administration officials about promoting the idea of returning to lockdowns?
They won't get rid of that idea. They won't say it's not going to happen, which is, scary in and of itself. The president intimated that they're trying to avoid doing that, but just by even talking about it, it affects the economy and it affects the economic wherewithal. And then you start getting into the politics of things. I mean, is this all a setup to another big dump of money from Capitol Hill, and somehow they tie the $3.5 trillion human infrastructure project to somehow helping the economy in the post-second wave of COVID or fourth wave, whatever we're in? I think it's going to be a stretch, and I think that they need to worry about the policy pushback on the first part.
Where do you think this is coming from in the first place? It doesn't seem to me that there was a groundswell from the populace as to fear of the Delta variant like there was a fear of the unknown, last year, the spring of last year. It seems to me this is mainly media generated and some politicians too. And it can only be in service to their very insular constituency because it's not. It just doesn't seem to me that there is a hue and cry for federal or state and local action like we saw last year.
Yeah, I think there are a few examples of post-July 4th where communities in particular were taken down as far as the number of cases. There's a story about Cape Cod and an outbreak there. There's something in Missouri. And they looked at the transmissibility of the Delta variant as compared to the regular strain. And now the question is the severe nature of it and whether whether people are getting sicker, even if you're unvaccinated. And I don't think we've seen that data. And again, we haven't seen a lot of the data behind these decisions.
One other piece of data that's been bandied about, we don't really have a handle on it, but it'd be fascinating to hear what Dr. Walensky says, is what percentage of those we identify as in high-risk categories is unvaccinated? Because the supposition is that it's very small.
I think it's pretty small. I think we were getting up to 80 to 90% of our older population having been vaccinated. And of those, so for example, Israel has started booster shots for citizens over 60. Israel is a very small nation in comparison to the United States. But that's the way they're going, with a third Pfizer booster. I don't know if that's where we're going to go, but I think more concerning for example, members of the military or people in government is the mandate nature of a vaccine. We haven't really come to that point as a country. And I think, as you know, there's a lot of data that the vaccine is safe and, you know, hundreds of millions of people have taken it. But there are concerns about it from different quarters. And it's usually a decision between you and your doctor. And this is not that. And so it opens up a door and questions.
He is Brett Baer, Fox News anchor, special report, 5 p.m. Chicago time, weekdays. Number one best-selling author of 3 Days at the Brink, FDR's Daring Gamble to Win World War II, and the forthcoming To Rescue the Republic, Ulysses S. Grant, The Fragile Union and the Crisis of 1876. And tune in for his interview with Dr. Rochelle Walensky
tonight,
this evening. This is great. Thanks so much, Brett.
Okay, have a good one.
Yep, and Brett, be sure to ask her about schools if she thinks they should open in the fall. And Brett joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and remember all those green new jobs that were promised by Joe Biden and his alter ego, Comrade Bernie Sanders, going to revolutionize the American economy. Well, the second quarter GDP number was in yesterday, disappointed, and that's in the 6.5% GDP growth in the second quarter is mostly government funny money fuel to begin with, and one wonders what we are to make of those promises at present, and what that Senate infrastructure deal may portend on the same topic. For more on this, pleased to be joined by Jim Pinkerton, co-chair of the Rate Coalition and contributor to the American Conservative and Breitbart. Jim, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Nice to be here.
So where do we stand on the creation of 10 million, 20 million, 50 million green new jobs where those coal miners can learn to code and live, you know, in a tony place like Northern Virginia someday?
Well, like you, I had complete faith in Biden and Sanders could deliver on their promises.
Right.
10 good millions of new jobs. And so, probably like you, I was surprised to read in the New York Times on July 16th, quote, this is the New York Times, a news story, on its current trajectory, the green economy is shaping up to look less like the industrial workplace that lifted workers into the middle class in the 20th century, and something more akin to an Amazon warehouse or a fleet of Uber drivers, grueling work schedules, middling wages, and limited benefits. Now, I was really, really shocked to read that.
So it's not materialized yet, but the good news is help is on the way, at least if this trillion-dollar deal negotiated by Senate Democrats with the Biden White House comes to pass in the House, because we have a phantasmagoria of electric car charging stations and broadband and high-speed rail.
And solar power. That's, you know, it's worth understanding that the Biden plan of getting rid of coal and oil and natural gas and replacing it with solar, it's worth realizing that 80% of the solar panels in the world are made in China. So if we start doing this right away, we'll have to buy the panel from China. So we'll be shutting down power plants, the old kind of power plants, the ones that worked, and replacing them with solar panels made in China. Now, again, think to yourself in terms of good jobs and good wages. The good jobs and good wages are found typically in manufacturing. Installing is a good job, too, but not as good. And so if we buy things manufactured in China and simply hire Americans to install solar panels on everybody's house or in, you know, cornfields or wherever, that is a huge wealth transfer to China, even as, of course, the Chinese building new coal-fired power plants.
Maybe we could call that green gain-of-function research funding for the Chinese. you know, and the other thing, too, because it was so popular during Joe Obama terms one and two, we got a little venture capital fund over at the Department of Energy under this plan. Jennifer Granholm is going to sit on a $70 billion fund to invest in all kinds of miracle companies like Solyndra again.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a fun job, huh? Give $70 billion to your friends.
Well, and so the good news here, you know, limited as it is, although don't tell Rob Portman that, is that the $40 billion to expand the IRS, that's out. The new infrastructure bank is out. Some of the $1 trillion includes $200 billion of repurposed COVID relief. Okay. Well, that speaks to what those COVID relief packages were like. Also, on the high speed and on the less good news side, mass transit received $170 billion in pandemic relief. Only about $20 billion of that's been spent to date, yet they're going to get another $90 billion under this deal. So, I mean, net this out for us, in your opinion, Republicans, the please clap Republicans like Rob Portman who negotiated this, is this a you know, the sausage making and it's the best we could do and it's better than nothing sort of Republican sort of response that we should accept, or is this a Republican capitulation on generally a bad idea?
I think it's basically sausage making and it's the best you're going to do. I mean, there's stuff that's valuable in there. I mean, we, you know, if we could move towards solar and renewables and so on and include carbon capture, which Biden has talked about it from time to time. In other words, that's about, and then we could simply say that we're not going to import things from China if the Chinese continue to, you know, generate their electricity through coal, then there could actually be a positive in this, which is to say we do what we've been, what President Trump was talking about, which is to decouple the economy of the U.S. and China and bring back, and if we could bring back solar panel manufacturing in back into the United States into places like Illinois or wherever, not China, then that would ultimately be good. I mean, I think we have to realize that there's a larger struggle for in the world with China now, and that we will certainly lose if we find ourselves endlessly and continuously dependent on China. So any opportunity we have to cut that link, I think, is worth some sausage in the meantime.
Yeah, because as you mentioned in your article, 80% of solar panels are made in China. But if they bring that back and start open manufacturing, will those 11,000 Keystone Pipeline workers, will they be able to apply for those jobs? Or did Biden just want them to go straight into coding?
I think they could take up diversity and inclusion work in corporate America. They could be in charge of hiring Colin Kaepernick for everything. Yeah, look, there's a lot of serious issues here. And yes, if America were serious about a Hamiltonian economic strategy, as in Alexander Hamilton, of making things here in the United States, that would be good both for the economy and for our national security, because you can't. You know, succeed if your enemy is making the stuff you need. I mean, you know, and the example that, you know, we might cite is during World War II, after the Japanese conquered Asia after Pearl Harbor, you know, all of a sudden we realized we had no source of rubber. And so we had to generate a synthetic rubber industry, mostly in Ohio, you know, and within a few months, it was a spectacular economic success. We created a synthetic rubber industry made out of oil in the United States, which was a great boost to the economy for the next half century. So if we could start doing things like that, This would all be to the good. I hope Republicans, and frankly Democrats too, join in the plan of how do we get back in the habit of making things once again in the United States.
Well, and I mean, the predicate question that we're wrestling with now as we're in COVID infinity here is are we going to be allowed to make things in the United States, even to the extent we could onshore businesses for comparative advantage reasons? And so, you know, what's your sense of where we stand? You know, Jay Powell's pronouncements on inflation is here to stay, combined with the disappointing GDP number, combined with, you know, some hushed but loose talk about a return to lockdowns in some places.
Well, I mean, I'm old enough, sad to say, to remember the 1970s very well. I'm a baby boomer, and so I sure as heck know what it's like to have high inflation and low growth. And the point about the Keystone Pipeline is well taken, and that certainly ought to be a campaign talking point in 2022, and say, okay, President Biden, we take you seriously, you know, for the moment on your promise to create good jobs and good wages here inside the United States as opposed to China. Now, here is our 10-point plan for doing that, and including Keystone. And do you agree with that? And yes, the issue of the vaccines and the masks has to get thought through. My own view is, I got vaccinated. I was happy to do so. I think Operation Warp Speed is one of the great triumphs of 21st century America, for that matter, 20th century America. And so if everybody, you know, President Trump worked hard to get the vaccine done, and a lot of people around him worked hard. And I think we should be celebrating that success, and that would transcend the mask issue. And if we need to get booster shots or something, okay, well, fine. I look forward to getting a booster shot if I had to. It beats being told what to do about wearing masks all the time.
He is Jim Pinkerton, co-chair of the Right Coalition, contributor to the American Conservative, as well as Breitbart. Jim, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, did you ever want to hear a rap tribute to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission?
How did you know? I've been clamoring for that for a while now.
Well, you're in luck. MC Asshat, the Western Suburban Congressman named Sean Kasten, has just such a ditty.
The most important federal agencies to fight climate change. I rise to continue our celebration of hot FERC summer. As climate activist Fergie would certainly say, the FERC-alicious definition is to make our planet cooler. So listen up, y'all, because this is it. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, better known as the F to the E to the R to the C, is one of the most important federal agencies to fight climate change, and if I'm doing this right, one that a few more of you are now keeping track of. Having a well-air-conditioned home when it's hot, that's FERC-alicious. Getting your electricity from the lowest cost reliable source, FERC-alicious. An electric transmission system that keeps everything from electric vehicles to steel mills running with zero carbon electricity, FERC-alicious. With record-setting heat waves already causing deadly droughts, wildfires, and overwhelmed power grids, we've run out the clock and must transition to a clean energy economy, and we need FERC's help. So today I'm proud to introduce the Right to Timely Rehearings at FERC Act with my friend Mr. Malinowski, a bill to ensure that everyone has access to fair and timely hearings at the commission. But Congress can't do this alone. Moving at the pace demanded by the climate crisis will take all hands on deck, and a fully staffed FERC is going to be critical to that success. Thank you, Madam Speaker, and I yield back so I can now go work on my fitness.
I can now work on my fitness?
Yeah, and then he took a shower clock off. This is not Sean Kasten's first foray into rapping.
There's so many problems in the world today, and so many politicians are unwilling to say anything that might alienate their base. But what are you doing? That base is racist and science denying and loony. Yeah, I said it so soon because a base, that ain't nothing but a lazy excuse made by a man who knows that his views got frozen in time about 1962. But we know that the future belongs to the proud, to the loud, the unbowed, those endowed with the knowledge of true leaders, and our final crown.
Woo!
Hey, God, he's so hip. That is the word, the definition of cringe.
MC
right there.
Asshat, FERC-alicious, to borrow again from Sebastian Maniscalco, hey, Western suburbs and Northwest suburbs who are represented by Sean Kasten, aren't you embarrassed? Aren't you embarrassed?
The more you listen, the more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Since we're in this Groundhog Day stasis with respect to COVID, let's go back and look at your countrymen there, Amy, the Swedes. In December, no mandatory measures were taken to limit crowds on public transport and shopping malls or in other crowded places. Coronavirus testing, contact tracing, source identification, and reporting were limited. Remain inadequate was the criticism of Sweden at the time. High schools closed temporarily. Grade schools never did.
Never.
Mm-hmm. The predictions as to the consequences of Sweden's light touch approach, 96,000 deaths with a maximum of 183,000.
That's for a country of 12 million, by the way.
So you know, compare this to Illinois. Sweden's Lund University used the now infamous Imperial College London model. It meant 85 deaths for Sweden. Uppsala University suggested that 40,000 by May 1 and almost 100,000 by June. Total Swedish COVID deaths to date, 14,651. Despite the variant, no lockdowns, no daily COVID deaths.
Yep.
No daily COVID deaths.
Oh, yeah, for a while now. Uh-huh. Their hospitalization rate and the death rate, well, there is no death rate because there's no COVID deaths. And the 14,000 that you mentioned, you know, compared to Illinois, we have, what, 26,000 deaths here? But in Sweden, they're mostly, you know, those most vulnerable people in nursing homes and assisted living, because they're not like the states here. Their assisted living places and nursing homes have hundreds of people. They're huge facilities.
And they're also more ubiquitous than they are in some of their Scandinavian neighbors, which was one of the reasons that they ran a little bit ahead of Norway and Denmark. But here's the thing. Anders Tegnell, who's the state's top epidemiologist in Sweden, he's the Dr. Fauci there, basically said, hey, look, we could have done a better job. We should have done a better job protecting the high-risk people mm-hmm. in nursing home or assisted living facilities. So that was one area where we recognized we needed to improve. But again, that sort of modesty is absent in much of the West. By the way, Sweden's vaccination rate, which certainly is contributing to the lower caseload and to the no deaths, but in terms of Europe, it's right in the middle of the pack. It's 18th in Europe in total vaccinations. Huh. And yet producing those results. It's interesting. And back here, we're, as we've been discussing most of the morning, we're in the throes of talking about not just mask mandates, but vaccine mandates and even the L word being resurgent lockdowns.
Yeah, they're not ruling it out, folks.
Yet those mandates are for thee, but not for me in certain quarters. For example, flight attendants and teachers unions. Some of the minders of masks and vaccines in terms of you put your mask over your nose and get vaccinated if you want to ride this ride. Well, they're exempting themselves through their unions. An interesting piece, realclearinvestigations.com by Steve Miller, journalist Steve Miller, who also writes for the Texas Monitor. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning.
Morning. So tell us about flight attendants and teachers, you know, who are categorically heroes in this country, we're told.
Well, you know, what's probably the most important is that they're trying to impose these restrictions on respectively in airlines and in classrooms, and yet some of their collective bargaining agreements actually prohibit a mandatory vaccination plan for them. For the members of the unions, and they're very strident about this. Flight Association sends out a memo, strikes a deal with United, ensuring that its members won't be required to take the vaccination. in the letter to its members, the Flight Attendant Union, states three times that this is not a requirement, not mandatory that you take this this vaccine. At the on the teachers union, same thing. They strike deals in L.A. Public schools. The teacher union struck a deal to again ensure that the kids wear masks, but that the teachers are not required to take the vaccination.
And it's so strange because the teachers union here, they try to mandate them for vaccines, and they said no. But the teachers union want to mandate vaccines for our kids, and they're demanding 80% be vaccinated who can before the school year begins.
Right. That's right. That's right. And so that's part of it. I think it just seems all teachers would get vaccinated if this is their concern. They shouldn't be able to refuse vaccination and then claim their work is unsafe due to unmasked kids.
Well, here's the thing, too, as you heard from President Biden yesterday, he wants local state and local units of government as well as private companies. He wants them to go in the direction of vaccine mandates. But I didn't hear any mention of public sector unions or even private sector unions like Flight Attendants Union going in that direction. It seems like there is a union exemption from the commentary by left politicians as well as the press corps.
That could be, and it would be very simple to get flight attendants. You could probably require attendants to get vaccinated if it's a FAA requirement, a federal requirement. Rather easier to do than redo collective bargaining agreements, I think. You could just simply get that done, and they wouldn't have as much to complain about regarding their when they go through the cabin thing. We're going to do a safety and mask check, or anybody that's flown knows how they harass you.
And it's even to the point you mentioned in your piece that American Airlines and Southwest, they do not require their flight attendants or other employees to vaccinate. The association, the union, struck this agreement to allow unvaccinated members specifically to fly. So not only not mandating it, but then specific right. carve-out.
That's right. That's right. And it does seem that, I guess, if there's crew members, and part of that, it said the crew members who are unable to get vaccinated for valid medical reasons, they probably shouldn't have a job where they're flying with strangers every day. That's probably not a great idea, regardless of COVID.
Yeah, well, and teachers who don't want to be around kids because of fear of getting sick, they should find a new job, too.
Same thing.
Solar panels.
Right. And I mean, we've got plenty of jobs. So it would seem that it would be time for a career change for some of these people. But that union protection really, really extends and it imposes lots of restrictions on the rest of us.
Well, I suppose the Randy Weingartens of the world would just say, well, you know, that's the benefit of being a member of a union. What we need is more unionization in this country so everybody could enjoy the benefits of being a union member.
I suppose that would be a recruitment technique, wouldn't it?
And with respect to the schools, there's two issues, it seems to me. One is whether it's a good idea to be vaccinated, whether it's somehow dangerous to fly or to be in a classroom if you're unvaccinated. And there's very little evidence to support that's true, even if you think it's a good idea on balance. There's just not evidence to say this puts you in a high-risk position. There's just no evidence to support that. And then there's the secondary issue where you have the federal government, the President of the United States, calling for mandates, but not with respect to unions. And those issues seem to be conflated a little bit, but I just wanted to separate them out.
Yeah, yeah, it is. But it's again, no matter how you feel about the vaccine and so on, I guess that's a separate issue. But yes, no matter what, you should probably be able to, you shouldn't have a carve out for a public union. And also, in the 3 days since this article has been published, we see more and more school districts now just moving to impose mask mandates in classrooms for this fall. And it's just that's just the way it's gone. And I'm not sure where the end comes.
What's the union's response? What do they say? Well, wait a second. If you think this is a good idea, if you want this to be imposed on customers or students, then why wouldn't you want to lead by example? What's the response?
Well, that's interesting because we tried to reach out to both of those major unions that were part of this story, and just zero response, just nothing. They just don't want to talk about that. It's probably a question they don't get asked very often.
Yeah, well, they're so shocked by it, they don't know. Maybe, I assume they're still reviewing the data and the science with their experts. You know, that's always a good wave off to push off any answer to any question, right?
Yeah, right, we'll get back with you, yeah.
Well, do you think all this, you know, there's one out of five flight attendants said yesterday that they witnessed or have been part of a physical altercation, you know, since masking began. What role do you think masking has in not giving people food or water or, you know, alcoholic beverages on planes? What role do you think that has in this?
Well, I mean, you know, you do notice that they, you know, they cut back alcohol and so on, and the aggression. I think people are more worried about, you know, a mask slip that would result in an arrest or this exorbitant fine that some places are imposing. And it creates a lot of tension. And so, you know, when you have somebody running through the cabin at all times kind of policing this, it gets a little weird. And with regard to the food and everything, I mean, I think I just read that some of the airlines are now bringing back food and so on.
Well, United is, but just flights to Hawaii, which that's nice of them for a 10-hour flight, and three locations in California. And that's it. It's a trial basis.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, okay. They're going to see how that goes.
Yeah.
Well, they'll have to let the mask slip for the food at least, you know.
And of course, there's some variance too. I mean, I sat next to a flight attendant waiting to board a plane in Columbus the other weekend, and you know, she got the joke. I mean, she, you know, so they're human beings too. So there's a diversity of opinion. We're talking about sort of writ large at the union level from a policymaking perspective. But it's not like there's not a lot of flight attendants and even teachers that understand the hypocrisy and the silliness of it all. They're just, you know, following orders, as it were. But one other point, though, too, and I don't want to limit just the flight attendants, the pilots also have union, and they've got to carve out as well, as I understand from your piece.
That's right. Yeah, the pilots union has also been part of this, the urging of these of the masking. And although I'm not sure the pilots are nearly as involved in contact as the flight attendants, so they don't even really seem to have much of a beef. Plus, they're up front. I mean, they can take off their masks. I'm sure they don't wear their masks when they fly.
Yeah, I just
make
sure
they need to communicate.
Right. I mean, but when I'm deplaning and they say bye-bye, I want to make sure they're at least 6 feet away with a mask on, because that's an important interaction.
Have a nice day.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
It's such a meaningful part of any airline experience. He is Steve Miller. He's a journalist for RealClearInvestigations.com, as well as the Texas Monitor. Check out his piece, Flight and Teachers Unions. Masks for thee, no mandatory vaccinations for we. Steve, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
I understand that day one of Lollapalooza, 90% of attendees presented vaccination cards and another 8% presented negative COVID tests.
Oh.
And the remaining 2% were executed on site.
Exactly. They were taken down. But they do have, you know, vaccination sites at Lollapalooza, because that's what you want to do on a hot summer day right before you get your drink on, is get a vaccination. But they are offering it. There's testing sites all around it, including in Lake Point Tower. But I let me get this straight. So Governor Pritzker issued a 19th emergency proclamation, yet this is allowed to happen. Lollapalooza, did you see the video? I mean, people are on top of each other. They're singing, dancing. I'm glad they're having fun, but are we really supposed to believe that there's a public health emergency when they're allowing this?
Was Tiny Dancer there?
I don't know.
He was shaking his booty.
Too tiny. Well, see, that's what's so weird. Well, let me play this first, because one of the participants was a little leery of, yeah, what are we doing here?
Crazy, honestly. Like, they're having this massive concert with, like, COVID still going on, but we attending out here.
That's about the logic. It's crazy they're doing this. That's why I'm here.
Exactly. But, you know, I never thought in my life I would agree with Dr. Emily Landon, who mentioned this earlier this week.
Remember how much people are motivated by money. It's really all about money. People, in many cases, will throw you, your health, your family's health, your grandmother's health under the bus in order to make a few more dollars.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. But Mayor Lightfoot says it's safe. Dr. Awardi admitting it could be a super spreader event.
It's good enough for me.
Yeah, but they're going through the thing.
Are they there?
Did you see the
triple spread in Awardi? Are they there in their Ronabusters outfits?
Oh, that's such a great. Yeah, they had different outfits. Remember when they promoted that Lollapalooza was back? Dr. Awardi had sparkles on her face. Remember that? Like it looked like a face mask thing. They are going to Foo Fighters, I heard. And Governor Pritzker's going with his daughter because what 19-year-old girl doesn't want to hang out with their dad? Here's JB about Lala.
I'm going to watch every single day what it looks like in terms of cases rising and make decisions, smart decisions for myself, for my family, for our friends.
So he's going to go to Lollapalooza, but still monitor the numbers.
Yeah. Fat Caesar is going to be in the reviewing stand watching how things transpire while he enjoys music that he listens to regularly.
Oh, yeah,
course.
Sure.
Now, it's interesting. I understand that most of those vaccination cards had the name McLovin as the ID. I don't know if those were authentic or not.
And if you guys want to see this, follow me on Twitter or just go to Twitter, Amy Jacobson, and you can see what really vigorous screening they're doing of these vaccination cards. It's just, they're just walking in and they say wristbands, card, and they're just walking by. They're not even checking. You can get any cue card, any index card, and hold it up and be like, yeah, I got vaccinated. It's absolute insanity. But, you know, people, you know, they feel safe because of this.
I had to get tested literally the day before my flight, which is on the 27th, and I tested negative, and then I tested negative yesterday.
Just test everybody. And the people that come back positive, they're going to be considered Illinois positives, which is going to drive our positivity rate, and even if they live in a different state. Do you see what I'm saying?
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper. Hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
Yeah, Dan and Amy, it's time for Open Mic Friday, taking your calls with comments, criticisms, compliments, general crackpottery. We'll take it all. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line as well. Get through as many calls as we can, so if the lines are busy, just keep calling. You know, Amy, thinking about Jelly Belly at on the reviewing stand, and boy, I hope that's reinforced, at Lollapalooza, I can't help but think of Commodus in Gladiator.
Yeah.
And that scene where Maximus says to Commodus, the time for honoring yourself will soon be at an end. But the problem is we don't have a Maximus in Illinois. So the time for honoring himself won't soon be at an end for Jelly Belly, I'm sorry to say.
And does anybody want to see our politicians dancing? Like,
yes,
I don't want to see Lightfoot and her wife or Dr. Awardi.
And I want
or Dr. ZK.
I want to see them all scantily clad, too.
Oh, God. Pritzker, I don't want to see them dancing. Please,
I want to see them all in thongs.
What adult is going to Lollapalooza? Please?
I want to see Lightfoot and Awardi and Ezekiel and Jelly Belly in like a mosh pit.
They could get front row seats if they really wanted.
They should. They should. They're men and women of the people. They should interact with the kids. I mean, the kids love these politicians because they're so hip and now.
I mean, what is Pritzker going to wear?
I told you. I think you should wear like short shorts and a little crop top.
Oh, a little. I mean, you should see what these women are wearing. And these are kids. I have not seen one adult trying to enter Lollapalooza yet. Because the line stretches all the way down Michigan Avenue there.
Yeah, well, most of the adults tried to bribe their kids to not go to Lollapalooza, but that was largely ineffective, I presume. Andy in Hinsdale, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
You got to change that thing. It's Andy in Dallas. I'm down in Dallas.
Another expat. That's right.
Oh, you are?
Right.
You moved?
Yes, I'm washing my son's pickup truck this morning.
There you go.
Nice. Yeah. Ragger.
And then he's going to go clean his guns.
Dud.
Yeah.
But no, a couple of things, right? Lightfoot can't be interviewed by a white journalist, but she's got to go see Foo Fighters, possibly the whitest, most tasty suburban band in ever. I mean, I like Foo Fighters, but come on, they're super, super white.
Yeah, that's true. I do like Foo Fighters. I saw them at Wrigley Field, and it was when Dave Grohl had a broken leg. It was quite good. He's quite good.
I saw him at Wrigley too. Great concert, but life.
You know, and you know what we are, Andy. You know what we are, Andy. Two white guys.
Of course.
Do you guys bite your lower lip when you dance too?
Right? Yeah. Wear your nostrils, the whole thing. But the other thing, flying, right? I've been on a plane every 10 days since COVID started. So I've been on.
Me too. Like never stopped.
Now it's fully packed. Uh-huh. If I'm not flying Southwest, I fly first class all the time. We've been eating and drinking in first class the entire time.
It must be
so
nice.
What is it about? I mean, what is it about, you know, you can serve alcohol, you can serve food in first class, but, you know, the steerage, they got to go without. So
that's a great point. But as we know, I think the science and data have been pretty conclusive on this, that COVID does not interrupt first class. But the unwashed masses in steerage, you know, they're super spreaders. Mud people in coach. Yeah. That's great.
Weekend.
That's a great point. Thanks for the I love that. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, first class gets all the bennies.
Right.
COVID, you know, that drape protects first class
sure.
from COVID.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just ridiculous because flights are, you know, the costs are going up so much. And for what? You get nothing. You get a little shot of water and a Barbie doll bottle and maybe a biscuit and that's it.
Well, I mean, do you think that your snacks is what drives the cost of airline tickets?
No, I'm just saying that if you're going to pay money, you want something in return. You want to be able to buy or to purchase a beverage or to get a beverage for free and to buy a sandwich or something.
I'm Amy Jacobson. I want my Jack and Coke and I want it stat.
Oh, I don't like Jack and Coke. But I want a sandwich. If I'm hungry, I want to eat.
Yeah. No, sure.
I'm a diva up there in the air.
Airline food. You can't eat before you get on the flight.
Well, I can't carry it on.
Dogs to worry about. Tom in Blue Island. Oh, yeah.
Dan and Amy, good morning. Happy Friday. Open Line Friday should still be an hour. There's not enough time in a half hour, but anyway, I'll hurry. I'm a little older than you guys, and I've been told, and we've been told our whole lives, that for a medicine to be approved, first it has to be studied, than animals, than human studies for efficacy and any kind of danger for years and years. And now we're being assured that this vaccine is safe. And if you don't agree, that makes you an anti-vaxxer and some crackpot. One of those two statements has to be BS. So they can't both be true. And if I'm an anti-vaxxer, that's fine. And if you get Fathead Pritzker to dance in a dress, I'll go get the vaccine.
Thanks for the call, Tom.
Yeah, and how soon till he offers us $100 to get vaccinated? Because that's what Biden wants all the governors to use the COVID relief money to say, you know, become a COVID hoe and give everybody $100 if they get vaccinated.
Terry in Rogers Park.
Yeah, I think the real reason Chicago teachers are forcing children to suffer through being masked all day long when school starts again is to show parents they're still the ones in charge.
Well, yeah. Thanks for the call, Jerry. Is anybody confused on that topic? Does anybody think that somebody other than the teachers union is in charge of the Chicago public schools, or most public schools for that matter? I don't know. Boy, if you're still confused after the last year, then you're really confused. But you're right. I mean, they like to flex their muscles just to, you know, remind people in case there are any slow learners out there. Jerry in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Hey, I was just hoping to comment on how I felt, and I'm not exactly sure how I felt when I saw Lloyd Austin all dressed up in his mask and his face shield in the Philippines. I don't know if it was funny or sad or appalling, but I just wanted to mention that it's at least very, very stupid.
Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, thanks for the call, Jerry. Appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, the whole, you know, military is going to be covered by this vaccine quasi-mandate that Biden was outlining yesterday. And the military continues to suffer under the leadership of these, you know, awful politicians in uniforms that are adherents to the woke ideology, too. It's not just, you know, federal employees that are there. And there was this memo issued, too. This is July 28th. Friend sent this along. Memorandum senior Pentagon leadership, commanders of the combatant commands, defense agency and DOD field activity directors, updated mask guidance for all DOD installations and other facilities. And it's, you know, in accordance with the guidance released by CDC, you know where this goes. DOD requires all service members, blah, blah, blah. regardless of vaccination status, to wear a mask in indoor settings. Service members, blah, 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 who are not fully vaccinated also need to continue to physically distance. DOD installations, other facilities, and so on and so forth should post information on their websites clarifying the masking requirements. And so, I mean, this is what the military is being reduced to under the leadership of these neo-Marxists. It's sad. It is, you know, to his point, Jerry from Knoxville, it is, you know, I don't know what to think about it either. You have great respect for the military men and women. At the same point, the senior leadership is so complicit with this silliness. It's disturbing at minimum. Glenn in the South Suburbs.
Well, yes. The only good thing I can see coming from COVID is it has pulled the curtain from what we know as government. The only bad thing is, does the American electorate have enough intelligence to act upon what they see? Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, Glenn. Well, we're going to find out. I mean, there are elections rolling around beginning, as we mentioned earlier in the show, and we talked to Larry Elder this week with that recall election in California next month. I mean, that could be
a game changer.
It could be a nothing burger, or it could be seismic. And it all depends on whether California voters, I mean, think about this, whether California voters recall Gavin Newsom. Because if they do, you can argue, well, it's because of the homelessness and crime and just general quality of life issues, people fleeing California, losing a congressional seat for the first time in its history after the census. But so much of that has to be tied up into COVID policy, and that would be a watershed moment in this year and a half long saga, no question. Bob in Edison Park.
Hey, guys, you touched on Sweden earlier, which is a great point. I mean, Sweden is just, it should be a shining beacon of how they should be handled. But two other quick points with this deadly pandemic. If this were so deadly, why are we not scraping homeless off the streets on the daily basis? I mean, when Mayor Daley did that catastrophe in 95 with the hot summer, we were digging more homeless off the streets then. And one last point, too, the Amish community. These points have all been stated, but the Amish community, they don't get vaccinated. They live in close proximity when they go to church, and they're doing fine. It's a lie, guys. It's a lie. And then they're going to have Lollapalooza, like you guys brought up also. Lollapalooza, and then we're going to have a shutdown the month after. It's a joke.
Yeah. And all these visitors are going to bring, you know, drive our positivity rate up, and who knows about hospitalization? Who knows? But, I mean, I don't care. I want them to have fun, but you know what's going to happen. When the cases go up, instead of looking at hospitalizations and death rate, the CTU is going to glom onto that and have their little temper tantrum and then postpone the beginning of school. I'm telling you that is what's going to happen. And I hope I'm wrong.
99.8% survival rate. 99.8%. So thinking about that and then breaking down that 0.2%, and this is the appropriate public policy response, what you've witnessed over the last year and a half. That's the simple question. Tom and Glen Ellen. Hey, Tom.
Tom.
Hi. Sorry. So just a couple of things to weigh in on. The airlines, you're talking about air travel. It's horrible. It's the worst ever. I've flown Southwest. They're total mass Nazis. American is a little more lenient on it. But as soon as I get off the plane, I take the mask off. I walk through the airport, no mask. No one says anything. And I would say 98% of people are wearing masks like sheep, right? Craig Anderson of IHSA better get a backbone and not mess with the high school season.
Oh, he better not.
Academy. Right, Amy, I know how you feel about that, and I agree with you 100%. I want to see Friday Night Lights at Bennett Academy playing football, Friday Night Lights. And Lollapalooza is the worst nightmare for parents, the worst 4 nights. I hate it. Even before the whole COVID thing, that two boys have gone through that, waiting for them to come home is the
worst
parents' nightmare. Yep, absolutely.
Thanks for the call,
now
Tom.
It's payback because I did this to my mom, and now I know.
Yeah, and,
you
and by the way,
compliant, Dan.
Since I didn't go to a lot of places. Since Tom mentioned Bennett Academy too, a reminder for those with kids in private schools to remind your private schools and their parental advisory committees and the principals and so forth. We know from schools, private schools that have gone into the darkness, like Loyola Academy and Wilmette, these are guidances. You're allowed to stand up for truth and common sense guidances. So we talk a lot about the government school systems and all these public sector mandates and public sector focus. Private schools need to step up and show the better way. Randy and Bartlett.
Yeah, trying to follow the science and I'm lost. That's all I gotta say.
You're not the only one. You should go work for the CDC. Thanks for the call, Randy. I mean, it's true.
It's true.
I did totally understand it. Appreciate it. It's a lot to keep up with on a daily basis, particularly because there does seem to be so much capriciousness surrounding the choices that are made. And as we talked about with Brett Baer, and a reminder, he's interviewing Dr. Rochelle Walensky, FDA director, CDC director tonight. So you want to see that. You won't show us your work. You constantly prattle on about science and data. You do a reversal of policy and you won't show us the alleged studies that this reversal is based on. And then you want us to have confidence in your expertise.
They have way too much power.
Craig in Old Town.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Amy. I could do about 20 minutes on Kinzinger, and a few months ago I wrote a long piece about him, but I'll sum it up as follows. Adam, don't lecture the little guy in the middle of America who goes to work every day doing a job he probably didn't dream of doing when he was a kid, but he does it to put food on his family table. Don't lecture the little guy as if he's some rube who can't understand or comprehend the difference between the actions of a small group of people who got out of control, and then ask him to help you understand the impact of new administration and the changes in regulatory barriers and the international import-export of his corn and soybean product and how the technological challenges the modern farm industry has on his bottom line. Don't lecture the little guy who has to watch himself and the things he believes in get berated in every form of media, on every platform, from every direction, all day, every day, through people cast to look, act, and think like the rube they think he is. Don't lecture the little guy who all he does in response to the constant barrage against his psyche. The only thing proper for him to do in response is to go into the little booth at the local VFW in Kankakee to vote for you. If the little guy in the middle of the country needed another lecture, they could just turn on the news. If the little guy in the middle of the country needed another lecture, they could just open any paper or magazine or almost any website. If the little guy in the middle of the country needed another lecture, they could turn on Netflix or Disney or Amazon or YouTube or their podcast apps and get all the lectures their little heart desires all day, every day. If you want to give a lecture, Adam, you can step to the damned lectern in the United States House of Representatives and demand your colleagues tone down the rhetoric whenever you damn well please. And you can go on any show you want and tell them to tone down their rhetoric whenever you damn well please. And anytime you and your wannabe patricii want to not only preach unity but actually abide by that unity, you and your friends can do it whenever you damn well please. So go on then, Adam. We're waiting.
All right, Craig, as always, very good. Wow. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. The only thing better on radio than Craig's commentaries?
Is your commentary.
My 60 Seconds of Sanity. That's right. That's correct. Rich in Indian Head Park.
Oh, yes. Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. I just wanted to ask you guys, the NFL announced that they were going to play a so-called national black anthem and then the national anthem. My question for you is this. What if they stand for the black anthem and then kneel for the national anthem? What kind of blowback is the NFL going to get? Thanks and have a nice weekend.
Thanks for the call, Rich. I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is.
Nothing.
We'll have to see. I mean, we'll see if the ratings continue to dip. We'll see if fans return to the stadiums, at least where they're allowed to. We'll see what the fall brings in some of these cities and states. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what the American people are willing to tolerate or not anymore, what they're willing to subsidize or not anymore. I don't know. It's a good question. All right. And to close it out in style, as he always does, Chuck and Delavan.
Hey, thank you. This is a public service announcement. When you come and visit Wisconsin and you're out on a dance floor, don't bring your beer with you or your drink. Nobody's going to give you a Mickey Finn up here. So otherwise, you're just going to create a problem while I'll slip and fall. And then when asking for a song request, always tip the band. Don't, that's the next thing. And then don't ever cut through the dance floor just because, you know, the bathroom is closer. And you know, because that could cause problems. Oh, so this weekend, I tell everybody, get out and do some dancing.
All right. There you go. Thanks for the call, Chuck. Great do's and don'ts for Jelly Belly and Triple Threat and Arwadi and Ezekiel, who will be dancing the nights away at Lollapalooza. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.